Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Harry's, for guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Go to harrys.com/hamnation to get $5 off your first order. By DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 247 for May 11th, 2016. The Old Man's Walking Stick Antenna.
Hello, everybody. It's K9EID, and I'm live from the Ozarks tonight. I know I've been running around a lot, but I'm really here. And boy, we have got a blockbuster tonight. We always have good stuff, but tonight is a lot of good stuff. And we're going to have it's a lot of stuff you're going to learn. Let's go around the horn and make sure who all's here from Costa Mesa. We got that's Captain Gordo tonight. Look at you.
Hi there, and good evening. We sure look forward, Bob, to seeing all of our Ham Nation friends at Dayton Hamvention week after next, as well as this weekend at the Rocky Mountain Convention in Keystone, Colorado. Back to you, Bob.
All right. You'll probably meet up with Amanda there. What's happening in Mississippi? Did you fix any transmitters today, George?
Actually, I was at a transmitter site today, and I tuned it a little bit. You know, it's getting that time of year that your transmitter shouldn't be changing tune, but sometimes they just do. And I did a little tweaking today to, you know, get that 35 kW just right before it goes up to the antenna. I'm going to have John Porting, W6NBC, join us tonight, Bob, for another wild and crazy antenna project. And then I've got one photo I'm going to show tonight that is sort of a blast from the past. I won't give it away yet, though.
Okay. Adelia, we get you and John together. There's no telling what's going to happen. And then we got race car Don. Hey, Don, how are you doing? Okay tonight?
I'm doing awesome tonight. We've got Tamitha Scove coming up tonight in Newsline. And something came across my Facebook feed this morning that totally not amateur radio related, but it's kind of cool. It was a picture from 5 years ago of my wife in a hospital room where she had had half of her kidney taken out because of a cancerous tumor. Well, that was 5 years ago, so she's still here, and for that I'm eternally grateful. So I wanted to pass that along that she's been cancer free for 5 years now. So that's awesome. So I just wanted to share that because it makes me happy.
Absolutely. So happy. That's great. Well, before we get to, I have to tell everybody, I got a very nice message from Simon, ZL2FAE. Simon and his lovely wife come to Dayton each year, but they made all the reservations, but they're not going to be able to make it. They're going to come later. But what we're doing is letting anybody know if you need a room in Dayton, he's got it. It's at the Marriott Courtyard on Miller Lane, starting Wednesday through Monday. If anybody needs a room, send me an email. It's K9EID at ARRL. Send me an email, and I'll get you in touch with Simon. And because rooms right now, I don't know that you could get one. So at least anything decent. So Simon's in the chat room also. You might want to go over and find him. Well, you know how much I talk about this stuff behind me, and I've been using for many, many years a VFO that really came from a Jeep. It was a BC-458 transmitter for the Jeep and airliners, the old B-52s and B-29s. This is what they used. That guy. And Wes Shum figured out how to do a little modification. He even made a matching cabinet for it, and that was our VFO. But it wasn't real stable, but it's okay for those days. Well, a company called Hegarty, Jim Hegarty, he built a really cool digital board. And I got a hold of this, oh gosh, maybe well over a year ago. And you guys know how much I've been running around. And I didn't have, I haven't taken the time to build anything for it. And you can't, I had it working, all the boards laying out here. Well, my good friend Wayne, you remember Wayne? WA4FTY. Wayne is what we call the Harvey Wells guru. Wayne, let me turn this on. Wayne and I share the Harvey Wells story. It's just a fascinating transmitter. And there's one behind me, and I still use it every day. I've had it since 1956. It was my first transmitter. But what did Wayne do? He goes out and he finds a bunch of them. Now, this is his transmitter. You can just see the edge of it here. But he took like the case of one and made a receiver out of it. And what you're looking at, you would say, well, that's a Harvey Wells. Well, not really. It's a matching receiver. He took a 2-meter Gonset receiver and made an all-band receiver out of it. Fascinating story. We'll get into that more. But he offered to take my VFO boards from Jim, and this is what he did to it. So we're going to run a really cool video that he did, and I'll narrate some of it through for you. What's amazing is that not only did he did he do this, but he did the video. So let's roll it, Brian, and get all these things happening from Wayne. And as I said, he also did a great job on the video. Starring part of, no, that's not true. The star is he and some of his buddies, as we'll see here. And he goes through the whole project of building a digital VFO. And I want all of you to follow because you can do this. You can do this. Just takes a little time. There is how he laid out the front panel. And that was Bob, KA3IWS. These guys all meet down on the low end of 75 meters, and they're all good friends. And there's the front panel. Took that layout that Bob did and figured it all out, put it on metal, and started punching holes. And that's the control box. And there's the front panel and then the inside view of the control box. And then you have to put all this together and make it all kind of fit, which they did. This is the rear of it because we're going to have some connectors coming out the back. So they built all of this together. And look here, we got a nice little box. The VFO is there on the right. And then the bottom is the power supply. And really kind of cool what he did there. He vented it because going to be a little heat in that bottom in the transformer and stuff. But there's all the boxes put together and ready for assembly as far as the PC boards and the switches and all of that. And he painted it all. Of course, that had to be done first. And now we got to see who goes where and what goes here and there and so on. And Wayne laid that all out. The VFO dial LCD panel, that was with the boards that I got from Jim. And there you are, all this ready to go. Now, he had to do a connector on the main board, because of it's all going to plug together. And that worked really good instead of hardwiring it. And there's the main boards that you can see that I got from Jim, the buffer amp. And we have to have a buffer amp because we got to have a little bit more output. Right at the center top, about 12 o'clock, is the main digital VFO, the display unit and all that's to the left. And that's a buffer board on the right as an amplifier. And so there are all the switches. And he got it all wired and ready to go. Probably double checked it several times to make sure it was all in the right place. And there was ready to rewired and put into the cases. Wayne is really quite a builder, and I really appreciate all the work he did on this thing. That's the encoder board. Encoder board is the knob, the main knob that sends the signal to the digital VFO as to what frequency it's going to be on. So they got it all ready to go on the panel, figured out which switches wanted to go where. And we had to put that decoder board in there. So he kind of looked around to see where the best place was for the layout of all that. And boy, it turned out really well. So they got her all ready to go. The housing's all there. And this is the way to build a beautiful piece of gear. Do it in sequences like this so you know what's going to go where, and not just try to stuff things in a box. You've got to think ahead. And he did that for sure. So we're all ready to go here inside. That's the this display. We saw the front of it. Well, that's the back of the display. And see, that's why we had to have that wired. Look at the front panel he did. He did that really nicely. And he was Joe Morse, AD4W. It was a whole team that he put together. But isn't that cute? All ready to go. And got the switches together and got a nice red knob. I like the red knob, Wayne. That's cool. And the synthesized frequency will show up in the LCD panel. And you see the calibrate switch and the recall. And then there's a save for memories. You can have different memories on this. This was the clever thing that Wayne come up with. You can rotate both dimensions. You can rotate it on the power supply, and then you can tilt it back. So no matter where you put it on your desk, you will be able to see the display really well. Is that a cool idea or what? And that's all sitting on top of the little power supply. You can see the power supply in the back, but that all assembles. There's the transformer, the regulators, and the filter caps and all that for the plus and minus voltages that you need to run all this. That's the buffer board we keep talking about. It's really an RF amplifier. The main signal out of the digital board is not quite enough to drive some of these rigs. And we're going to drive the Harvey Wells with it, and we also will want to drive the 20A. And we can save those different memories in the memory circuits, and away it goes. So we're ready to rock and roll no matter what I want to use it on. That was, again, a very thoughtful thing that that the guys did when they were kind of designing all of this. And pretty much put together the control board, the base, the cabinet, the power supply, and we have, instead of a bunch of boards laying out here, which I used for a long time, now we have a decent VFO, and it's digital and it's not going to drift or any of that. And there's how they do the cables from the power supply in the back up to the display, and that really worked out great. And we're really enthused about this. It just works so good. The main BNC you see there, that's the output that will go to either one of the radios that we're going to use it on. And that's a close-up of that rear panel. And the 12 volts coming out of the power supply to feed up to the buffer amp and the display board. And there it is, sitting on Wayne's favorite frequency, 3715 on Sunday afternoon. That's where you can find these guys. They get in there about 4 or 5 o'clock and have a great time on the 3715. So he's got it all set up for me. So it's already in the memory and I can recall it. But what a great piece. I appreciate Wayne doing all this, because the not only is the project from start to finish great, but the video was super that he and Joe and Bob, everybody put together. And I wanted to share it with everyone because I want you to see what happens in building some of this homebrew gear. Although this doesn't look very homebrew, does it? Nope, it doesn't. We saw the Harvey Wells receiver that he built. My goodness, he also took another Harvey Wells and made an amplifier with a 4-400. There's Hagerty Radio Company, WA1FFL. And if you ever need digital VFO boards, there you go. I bought this from him over a year ago. And so we were really thrilled to be able to have all of this stuff going and in a box and so on. So that's the end of our little video show. And we'll come back here to me. And there it is live. Is that cool or what? So I'm so excited about it. I wanted to share it with everybody because you guys and gals need to get into building some stuff. And we're going to do some more of that. I've got a couple of projects, and George has got a couple of things, and we'll get into that this summer. So that's the story from here. And we're going to go out to the coast and see what Gordo's got cooking. I think he's got a few things out there for his shorts tonight, and his shorts meaning his shots. Gordo, it's all yours.
Roger that. They'll have to wait for the shorts until either Keystone, Colorado this weekend or Dayton next weekend, only if the weather is warm. All right, Army and Air Force, Navy, and I'll represent the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. We've got a mission for you. You don't have to be a member of the armed services for this, but we can help them this coming Saturday, the 14th. This Saturday is the annual 66th Armed Forces Day Crossband Military Amateur Radio Communications Test. This is where we transmit on ham frequencies, and with our other VFO, we listen out of band for military stations looking to make contact with ham stations cross band. That means get to know your radio, VFOA, VFOB, then go back to the receive and make sure you hit the split button. Double check that indeed it transmits where you want it to transmit in the ham band, yet you're receiving outside of the ham band, and you'll be able to take part in crossband military communications. Well, how do I know what frequency? Well, the military will be transmitting to you above many different ham bands, but the most common one is the 20-meter band. You could find them on 14385 or maybe as high as 14846, 14854, maybe as high as 15807, maybe below 20 meters on 13.993. So this coming Saturday, tune above and below the 20-meter band and catch a military station, and they will tell you where they are going to be listening. And once you know where they're going to be listening within the ham band, make sure you've set up split properly and work that military station. Do it professionally, rapidly as possible, and beside upper sideband and frequency shift keying, there's going to be serial PSK, MFSK with 5 different tones for some of our Coast Guard folks, MT-63, MTOR, forward error correction, automatic link establishment, ALE. So no matter what mode you enjoy, listen for the military out of band, just above or below the ham bands, especially 20 meters this Saturday, but transmit only within your privileges of the ham band where the military station says they're going to be listening. So I hope all of you this coming Saturday will enjoy the Armed Forces Crossband Military Amateur Radio Test. And by the way, for those of you on 60 meters, good news, you can go simplex on 60 meters with a military station under FCC Rule 97.111, and it's legal. Even though they're not a ham, we share the 60-meter band, so you'll be able to make that military non-crossband but direct contact. So if you've got the five 60-meter band channels, tune them in. You may hear your military station coming up there looking for a contact. So I hope to see many of you at Keystone, Colorado this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend for the Rocky Mountain Ham Convention. You'll hear more about it from Amanda. And then a week later, I'll go direct. We'll see you at Dayton Hamvention. We've got our Dayton button, so I'll see you at Dayton. So it looks like I'm going to turn it over now to Don and find out what's new with a good close shave. Don?
Oh, you're a Harry's man. You know what's up with a clean close shave. Let me tell you something. I've been shaving with Harry's for a while, and because Sunday was Mother's Day, I did two things for my wife. Number one, well, I got up and I made her breakfast. I made her French toast. And number two, I got my clean close Harry shave on, because if there's one thing my wife loves in this world more than French toast, it's my clean, close Harry shave. And it sounds funny, but it's true. She goes nuts over it. It's the strangest thing. And it's not really strange, because Harry's makes a high quality, high performance product. High quality, high performance German blades, crafted by shaving experts. They feel really, really good. And Harry's makes them. They own the company. They own the factory. I got to tell you, Harry's is the best shave I've had in years, and Harry's is factory direct. The blades are about half the price of the leading brands, and they ship them straight to your doorstep. You no longer need to deal with lines at the drugstore, wait for somebody to unlock the plexiglass counter and walk with you back to the thing, or carry it back for you because they're afraid you're going to run off with them because they're so expensive. Harry's does away with all that. You can get started with Harry's, and couldn't be easier. Over a million guys have made the switch to Harry's. The website is streamlined. It's very easy to use. It takes less than 30 seconds to place your order. The customer service, should you ever need it, is amazing, but you probably won't because they're so cool. And as you probably know, I've been using the Winston set. In fact, I have both the Winston and the Truman set. They're really high quality. The blades are ultra sharp. They give you a really nice, close, comfortable shave. You're going to love it. And you can see right there what comes inside. You get the razor handle. It's got a great look and feel. You get extra razor blades, and you get shave cream or the foaming shave gel. And it smells great. All the products are very sleek. They look just as slick as they can be. And the best part is they cost about half as much as the other razor brands, and they're shipped straight to your door. So why would you want to pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half the price at harrys.com? You can get the Harry Starter Set. That's the Truman. It's a great option for new customers. And an amazing deal for $15, you'll get a razor handle, the moisturizing shave cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for Ham Nation fans. You'll get $5 off your first purchase when you visit harrys.com/hamnation. harrys.com/hamnation. Now, they are making those amazing blades. Hey, no steel like German steel, and that is German steel. And it's Harry's. No compromise with Harry's. Give Harry's a try today. And Harry's, we thank you so much for your support of Ham Nation. harrys.com/hamnation. You need to go. And you can be a Harry's man, too. And, you know, it's not just for guys. My wife has her own razor. She's a Harry's girl. So
Hey, John. Susie, yes, also stole my Harry's razor. So she shaves her legs within the shower. So, wow. We got to watch our stuff around, so our ladies are going to take it away.
Well, no, you need to buy her own, Gordon. My wife's got her own. Buy Susie her own. Get one for the cat while you're at it. While you ponder that, let's go to Newsline before we all get in trouble. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2010, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, May 11th, 2016. The FCC has issued a warning to an unlicensed operator, charging him with jamming the bands in the New York metropolitan area. Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, has more.
The agency's enforcement bureau sent the warning to Daniel DeLisi of Astoria, Queens, New York, on April 20th. Acting on a barrage of complaints, the FCC sent the warning after its special counsel had several telephone conversations with DeLisi and gave him a number of verbal warnings. It then sent the document, which says in part, quote, "In spite of these warnings, the New York office continued to receive information that you were operating radio transmitting equipment on frequencies in the amateur radio services, land mobile radio services, and personal radio services without authorization," end quote. FCC direction finding had confirmed unauthorized 2-meter transmissions from DeLisi's home on April 7th, when it was also discovered he had a handheld radio and 7 mobile radios programmed to operate on those bands, along with rooftop antennas. The document also recounted that DeLisi admitted to the agents that he had operated on 147.96 megahertz that same evening. DeLisi has been given 10 days to respond to the notice before the FCC decides on sanctions.
Who says all hams are couch potatoes? Some of them have no trouble at all running a 6-kilometer course through the forest and finding 5 radio transmitters while they're doing it.
The annual USA ARDF championships are now complete. ARDF stands for Amateur Radio Direction Finding, also called fox hunting, fox tailing, and radio orienteering, all on foot under international rules. This year's national championships took place in early April near Killeen, Texas, under the sponsorship of the Texas ARDF Group and the Austin Orienteering Club. Anyone at any transmitter hunting skill level was welcome to compete, so there was a wide age range of participants from all over the country, plus visitors from Ukraine and a high school exchange student from China. There were some past medal winners, while a few had never completed a full course before. The participants were divided into 11 age and gender categories, so the ones in their 70s didn't have to compete against primagers for the gold. The classic courses on 2 meters and 80 meters were over 6 kilometers from start to each of the 5 transmitters and then to the finish. In addition, there was a sprint event to see who could find 10 lower-powered transmitters fastest. There was also a foxhoring event. That's a new sport that combines orienteering and direction finding. Competitors were given a map marked with 10 circles. When they got inside the area represented by each circle, they could hear a QRP 80-meter transmitter and track it down with RDF. When it was all over, 16 OMs and 9 YLs had received gold, silver, and bronze medals to take home. Some of them are also getting invitations to travel and compete on Team USA in the ARDF World Championships, which will get underway in mid-September near Albina, Bulgaria. For the complete results and lots of photos of these championships, point your web browser to homingin.com. That's homingin as one word, homingin.com. That's also a good place to learn more about the fun of on-foot transmitter hunting and about bringing it to your locality. From Southern California, where we are planning several training events to get Team USA ready for the World Championships, this is Joe Mell, KZERO Oscar Victor, for Amateur Radio Newsline.
DXers can no longer hope to work the much-anticipated P-5D expedition in North Korea. It ain't happening.
The P-5D expedition to North Korea is dead. And it wasn't bad propagation, but a lack of funds and a need for secrecy that killed it. So says Paul Ewing, N6PSE, spokesman for the Intrepid DX group that had been planning the historic event since 2013. Ewing has said in a number of news reports that despite long discussions with the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, a breach in the required security surrounding those talks ended with permission being denied to work from North Korea. The North Korean officials had also requested a fee in connection with the expedition, Ewing says, and there was no funding to be had. The 10-day mission to activate the world's most wanted DXCC entity has now been scrapped. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
And finally, another reminder that the nominating period for the Bill Pasternak Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. More information and the nominating form can be found on the Newsline website under the YHOTY tab. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 38 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, Joe Mell, K0OV, John Williams, VK4JJW, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And now, here's your solar update. Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We have a massive solar storm that hits just in time for Mother's Day and gives us gorgeous aurora as far south as Germany and Arkansas in the USA and as far north as Perth, Australia. And then our telescopes capture the mystery of Mercury's transit just as the sun fires yet another solar storm. Those stories and more in the news this week. The sun has been the center of attention this week, first because of Region 2542 that has fired off solar storm after solar storm. Now, they haven't really been Earth-directed, but they've been gorgeous nonetheless. Then we had this massive coronal hole that gave us some really fast solar wind, much faster than we anticipated. And along with some kind of disturbed material in there, this managed to cause a huge solar storm at Earth and gave us some gorgeous aurora over Mother's Day. And then, like a cherry on top, we get Mercury transiting the sun. You see it right there? And just as it begins to go off screen, the sun fires yet another solar storm, as if to say, bravo. Switching to our solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are still coming down from that fast wind that's been lingering since the Mother's Day storm. So NOAA is giving us about a 40% chance of a major storm at high latitudes. We're only really expecting about active conditions, but these things should kind of calm down as the week progresses. At mid-latitudes, we're only expecting about a 15% chance of a minor storm, with things continuing to calm down in through about Friday. We might get a little bump up in activity because we have a solar storm that's kind of going north of us that was fired when Mercury was transiting. But that storm should probably miss us. But just in case, we might see a little bit of wake effects, and that could bump up the activity just a little bit. But all things considered, things should be kind of quieting back in through the weekend. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we really don't have much, so everything is pretty much in the green when it comes to flares. NOAA is giving us about a 5% chance of an M-class flare, and that's mainly because of regions 2542 and 43, like we saw earlier. Now, as far as solar flux is concerned, we barely have enough for some decent propagation, but that is going to get a little bit better as those new regions that are rotating into the Earth view from the east, those start showing up and contributing. So around the end of the week, things should start looking much better for you amateur radio operators. So the space weather this week has been pretty exciting. Along with the transit of Mercury, we had a gorgeous Mother's Day storm. Now remember, this was for the American Mother's Day. And if you recall, back in March, there was also a solar storm for the UK's version of Mother's Day. So this means Mother Earth has celebrated Mother's Day twice. So way to go, moms. Meanwhile, you aurora photographers, take it easy. You guys worked your buns off just this past week, so it's time for you to rest and relax and go through some gorgeous aurora photos. And you amateur radio operators, you can finally start getting back on the bands just in time for the weekend. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
All right. Always nice to have Dr. T join us. Appreciate everything you do for us. Tamitha, just amazing. You know, Bob, this time last year, Dr. T was getting ready for her very first trip to Dayton. Hard to believe that Dayton is right around the corner. What's going on with Ham Nation and Dayton this year? I'm sure we got some plans, right?
Well, I'm here. I'll just show you. Look at all this nonsense down here. Can you see all this stuff down here?
Uh-huh.
Look at all this. I got my DX engineering bag down here.
There you go.
Computer bag. We'd really be in trouble if I forgot my computer. And this thing is full. Fill microphones and cables and all that kind of good stuff. So that's what's happening. And we have to get that all loaded in the van and all that good stuff. And we'll head it out here. So we'll be there Tuesday afternoon. But anyway, I want everybody to join us on Wednesday night here because it's going to be live. Valerie and Gordo and myself, and anybody else, if you're around the Dayton Crown Plaza around 7:30, 8 o'clock Eastern time, where we'll start setting up, come on up and join us. You can be in the live audience. And we even have a band, don't we? Yes, we have a band all made up of hams. Let me tell you, it's great. So anyway, we'll see you, of course, here on the air, but we'll be broadcasting from the DX contest party at the Crown Plaza. And thanks to DX Engineering and Tim Duffy to set that all up. So we'll see you next Wednesday from Dayton. There you go. And I'm really excited about it. These broadcasts are always so much fun, and especially when all of us can get together live. That's really cool. George, we're going to miss you, but I guess we get to see you on Thursday. Is that right, George?
That's right, Bob. Yeah, I wish I could be there Wednesday night, but not going to make that. I'll be getting in Thursday afternoon, though, and we will be doing some live stuff from the ICOM booth at 2 p.m. on both Friday and Saturday. We're going to be recording some live shows there. They won't be streamed live, but we'll bring them back and have a lot of good footage afterwards and some interesting interviews. You know, I got a picture here that I ran across today. This is actually a screenshot of a video of a guy I know. This is Don Sitton with KPET in La Mesa, Texas. Now, that computer you see in the background there, the software running there, that is software that my partner over at Amateur Logic, Tommy Martin, and I wrote in the 90s. That computer right there was built in 1999, and it's still going today. As a matter of fact, we won an award for that software for blind operators in 1998 at the NAB show in Las Vegas. But just the specs on that computer, I just wanted to share the specs. I looked them up when I found this video online today. Brand new video. He's still running this, by the way, since 99. It's kind of an old computer. It's running Windows 95. That is a Pentium 233 MMX computer. It had 64 megabytes of RAM. It had two hard drives in it. It had a whopping 10 gigabyte drive and a 6 gigabyte drive. And it had two aptX audio cards that were about the only decent ones you could get when we first started in that business. They were full-size ISA cards, you know, about yay long. So, it's just amazing to see that he still got that running after, into the next century here. You know, you can build your antennas out of a lot of different things, and there's no end to the creativity. And here's our friend right here, John Portoon, W6NBC, to just show us one more. Hi, John.
Hi there, George. Nice to hear from you. Nice to be back again.
Yeah, what are you going to show us tonight? I know it's got to be wild and crazy.
Oh, of course it is. Okay, let's get straight into it. Slide my mouse over here so I can change this. Well, tonight, as you can see here on the screen, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the current article I have in QST this month on a ham gentleman's walking stick, a 2-meter 440 antenna in a cane. And I've been getting quite a lot of response on this this article from, I suppose, more the old geezer fringe. But anyway, it's fine. I got the inspiration for this this antenna in a cane instead of the stiletto or the whiskey flask while I was attending, which I do every year, and in fact I organize the hams for the Santa Maria annual Elks Rodeo Parade, which you see here on the screen. And I got to thinking, you know, I'd like a better antenna than just the rubber ducky on my handheld. And I thought, well, you know, I could carry a cane and it with me easily. I don't need it to walk with, but it would be a great place to hide an antenna. Then I could hang it in a tree. So here it is. And you'll see it. And you'll see it shown in the May issue of QST. It's a ham gentleman's walking stick. And interestingly, inside of it is a true 2-meter, 70-centimeter antenna. You might think, oh, what do you mean by a true? Well, you'll see here in a minute what I mean by that. Not all so-called dual-band antennas are really true dual-banders. The project was inspired by the cane on the left, which was built by W6ND, a good friend of mine, Ernie Sloan, and he built a 2-meter-only version of it out of half-inch PVC. I decided I wanted something on both bands, and there's mine on the right. I'll show you a little more of it later here, and it truly is a 2-meter, 70-centimeter antenna inside that cane, which you can hang in a tree. Later, after I built it, my good friend Jerry, AF6PZ, who I talk to every week on the Echo Link, he is a fancy woodworker, and he made this beautiful wooden version of the cane. And if anybody who'd like more information on the project where he made it, well, you can find a link to it on my website, w6nbc.com. Quite a number of both hams and woodworkers have been interested in this. It's a beautiful job that he did there. You can see it being turned here on a lathe. Inside of it is a coaxial dipole, and that's really the topic or the subject here tonight, the coaxial dipole. I know it's an antenna a lot of hams have thought about, but it really was the only kind of an antenna that would go inside of a cane. What is a coaxial dipole? Well, you see one here in schematic form. It's a piece of coax coming up from the bottom there, and everything's been stripped back on top, leaving a typical quarter wave spike or a 19-inch spike at the top. That's the center conductor of the coax. A lot of times the other half of the antenna, which is the sleeve portion, which is also a quarter wave length long, is made by folding back the braid. Or you can put a actual metal sleeve around it. Hence, it's, the antenna is coaxial, and the feed is up through the bottom. It's really a half-wave dipole. I decided that using a sleeve method was a little too bulky for the cane, so I tried a different technique, and this works very well. Instead of using a heavy sleeve or folding back the braid, I simply took some ferrite choking and put it a quarter wavelength down the outside of the coax. So the coax comes up to the feed point there where the braid ends. The center conductor continues for a quarter wavelength, but another quarter wavelength back down the outside of the jacket is some ferrite choking. And this allows that whole thing to act as a half-wave antenna. Here's what it looks like inside, or at least this is a sample of it. You can see the coax there coming in from the top and one of the ferrite beads at the top. These are mixed 62 beads, which you can get, they're ferrite beads, which Mauser or DigiKey sells. And then you can see in this particular case, the outside of the shield has been exposed, and you can see the feed point there. And then from there on, it's just the center conductor. That's typically what's inside. Both the shield and the quarter wavelength center conductor are quarter wavelength, and they form a half-wave dipole above that ferrite, which chokes everything off from going down the cable. Actually, I use several ferrites, not just one. Here is the top of my cane. And you can see instead of using ferrites in it, I decided to use the old trick of coiling up the coax to make a choke. And as you can see, the coax comes in, goes through a slot in the top of the cane, comes out, winds around the top of the cane 7 turns, and then goes back inside. That acts as the choke and decouples the everything beyond the choke. Now, the real question, though, is how do we make such a coaxial dipole into a true dual-band 2-meter, 70-centimeter antenna? That's not as easy as you might think, because a lot of hams believe that any 2-meter antenna will work on 70 centimeters. Yeah, it sort of can, by using the third harmonic of 2 meters, you know, 140 megahertz, 3 times 140 is approximately 440. You know, a lot of people have tried to make J-poles into dual-band antennas, and you often see them out at swap meets and stuff. But they're really not true dual-banders. They work on 2 meters and 440, but they've got a problem. And here's the problem. Here's an easy neck radiation pattern from a simple 2-meter coaxial antenna. The 2 meter's fine. The energy goes exactly where you want it. It's the black display there and the blue line. The two meter energy goes where you want it. But if you just let the 2 meter antenna try to act on 440 as well, which it will actually tune up there, the energy goes where you don't want it, up at high angles or down at low angles. But you don't have to live with this. Here, in fact, is two plots done with EasyNeck. One showing you on the left there that the two plots both are in the 2 meter band at 146, but you'll see on the right the one that comes out in 440 is my antenna, my true dual bander. If you try to make just a 2 meter antenna work on 440, it'll be above the band. doesn't quite fit. So you have to fudge it at best. Well, how do we do this? How do we make this antenna, this coaxial dipole, into a true dual bander? Well, it's pretty simple. You see the coax coming in from the right, and you can see the choke wound around it to decouple the antenna from the coax. You see the braid coming out there, and then the center conductor sticking out. The whole thing there is the 2-meter antenna. But if we put two open-ended stubs at the right place on this antenna, the open-ended stubs will act as an open circuit and will cut off everything but the center portion. Now we have two true dipoles, two true half-wavelength antennas, which radiate in the correct direction. And that's how this antenna works. Here you can see the actual stubs inside of my cane. The top is the center conductor, and the stub is another piece of wire bent to form a approximately 6-inch long stub. The bottom one is the bottom stub, which is on the coax. Both are soldered on at the correct position. There's a nylon insulator to keep them separated. This particular antenna also, by the way, makes pretty good base station. You don't want to use it as a cane. Just take the handle off and put a straight bottom on it. Here's one of mine mounted outside. It's much shorter, much more attractive than a homebrew J-pole, and has exactly the same performance as a J-pole, quite equal in performance. So there you have the coaxial dipole. I'm going to switch back over live here to myself and show them to you. Here is my cane right here. I'm going to pull the top off so you can see if I can get them out to come out here. Yeah, well, the coax connector goes through the end. But you can see kind of how that's done. Didn't cooperate with me. Here's Ernie's original cane. And if I pull it apart, you can see what he did is he rolled up a bundle of RG-174 to make the choke. And here's Jerry's lovely cane. I'll show you the beautiful hand-laid, both the beautiful inlay on the top of it with his call sign and my call sign. And I'll show you. I'll unscrew the handle for you so you can see the inside of it. It's a real piece of woodworking art. Come on, unscrew. Things never work. There are the ferrites right there. You can see them on the coax. And here's the coaxial dipole inside. I've got heat shrink over the top of it. This one has an extra feature. As you can see right here, I shortened the upper section by curling it into a helix. So it's not 19 inches long, but only about 9 inches long. But this one is a single monobander. We didn't have room in it for the stubs. Well, there you have it. No whiskey flask, no stiletto, no special James Bond stuff, but just a ham radio antenna in a cane. Back to you, George.
John, that was a great project there. I saw the article in QST and really, really interesting. I like the way you pull that off. Would I be able to use this right here to convert my cane into an antenna?
How do you mean? I'm not following you.
My aluminum stick, will this work?
I still don't know what you mean.
Can I build one of your antennas in an aluminum stick here?
Oh, an aluminum cane? No, it needs to be a non-conductive cane, plastic or wood.
Okay, cool. Well, I kind of knew that. I was just trying to be silly, and it backfired on me. So.
Well, that's all right. Silliness is permitted. You know, my last time show wasn't exactly serious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for pulling that together for us, John. That was a great article in QST, and we appreciate you showing it to us here because, you know, there's folks who won't be seeing it otherwise. And a fun project there. And, hey, we're looking forward to whatever you might do next.
Very well, and I'll be glad to be back.
All right. 7-3, John. Well, you know, last week, I asked a question, What frequency do radio control clocks receive? Well, I had a number of answers there, and most of you got it right, but our lucky winner is Dennis Allen, WA5LXS in Carrollton, Texas. And he said, I believe the clocks run from WWVB on 60 kilohertz, and that's the time base. Well, you're correct, Dennis. So we're going to send you this MFJ 148RC radio control 24 12-hour dual clock, one you can set for your time zone and one for UTC or wherever. And it's also got a 10-minute ID timer in it. You'll enjoy this. So we'll be getting that out to you. And for next week, I've got another question here and another prize. And this one comes from the amateur radio technician exam. And I think if you think about this one a little bit, you'll be able to answer it. What is the primary advantage of single sideband over FM for voice transmissions? Your choices are A, single sideband signals are easier to tune. B, SSB signals are less susceptible to interference. C, SSB signals have narrower bandwidth. Or D, all of these choices are correct. If you think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could possibly win this DX Engineering DXE GBWM wall mount. It's a copper ground bus, great for your shack grounding. Mount it right to the wall. Number of holes drilled here for putting your own bolts in, plus big wires on terminals there and crimp terminals for smaller. You know, you need all your grounds connected in one place when you're doing grounding. And I'm not going to get into grounding because that's a controversial subject and we all have our own opinions. But I think most of us will agree that all your grounds should be together. This is a great way to do it right here. So hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win this DXE GBWM. Now, I did want to mention before I go, Friday night at 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time, if you're not doing anything, come over to live.amateurlogic.tv. We'll be shooting the next episode. And I've got an antenna I built myself that I'll be unveiling. It's not a walking stick, but a little different design. So come check that out if you're looking for something to do Friday night. And now let's get Don in here to tell us some more about DX Engineering.
You know, if you don't have one of these DX Engineering catalogs, well, then shame on you. You need to get one. This is the Autumn Winter 2015, which I believe is the most recent one. They should be coming out with a new one pretty soon, I would think. Everything is right there at dxengineering.com, so you need to go check that out. And let me tell you, if it's not in here or on the website, and there's so much more on the website because they update this stuff so much and they're constantly adding new stuff, if it's not on the website or not in the catalog, chances are you don't need it. And, of course, they'll be unveiling a lot of new stuff at Hamvention in Dayton. Yes, Hamvention is upon us, and, of course, like I said, DX Engineering is going to be unveiling some of the new product innovations. Make sure you visit the official DX Engineering booth in the main arena. You can't miss it. It's huge. It's right there along one of the long sides. See the latest. Plus, you can get the exclusive Hamvention-only deals and special prices. And you can see Tim Duffy and Mel will be there and all the great folks from DX Engineering. You can also find the DX Engineering team members all over Dayton throughout the weekend, not just there at the booth, but they'll be all over the place. Check out the schedule. It's posted under Tech Info and News at dxengineering.com. It will tell you exactly what events DX Engineering will be involved with. Now, the staff will be at the contest super suite every night and, of course, at Contest University. And if you're going to go to 4 days in May, DX Engineering will be there as well. There's going to be a small army of DX Engineering staff members enjoying the show. So if you see someone wearing a DX Engineering credentials, they would love to talk to you about your station, answer any questions, give you some advice, whatever. And, of course, the DX Engineering booth, that's going to be your go-to spot. It'll be set up along the big main arena there at HERA, as always. They'll be showcasing some exciting new gear for the new year for 2016. So be sure to check that out. And even though most of the DX engineering team will be in Dayton, the order and tech support lines will still be open. That means you can always order at dxengineering.com and also via the phone. The tech staff will be working at a reduced capacity, so exercise a little patience if you call, but nonetheless, you'll get your question answered, I promise you. And if you're going to be at Dayton Hamvention, make sure you stop by the DX Engineering booth. The technical advisors will be there. They'll help you solve any issues with your station in person, show you the latest product innovations, all the stuff that you're going to need, plus a bunch of exclusive show specials and temporary price cuts, too, at Dayton. So if you see someone walking around through the show wearing the DX Engineering credentials, you got to stop them. And you got to chat, because I'm telling you something, you're gonna learn something, that's for sure. DX Engineering is also an authorized E-Antenna North America distributor. That means you can now get these world-class antennas without the hassle of international shipping. DX Engineering has several antennas in stock and ready to ship today. The E-Antenna, they are rugged, high-performance antennas, and they're affordable, too. They're not going to break the bank. Select from E-Antenna's Yagi and Dipole designs, VHF and HF. Antennas can be found in some of Europe's most competitive DX stations. And now you can get them for your installation straight from DX Engineering. You don't have to go across the pond. And, of course, you know this. DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get that order in by 10 p.m. Eastern, and if it's in stock, it'll be on a trek headed your way that night, usually within minutes, sometimes within a couple of minutes after you hang up, or maybe even before. If you're going to sit there and chat for a while with the proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering will help you shrink the globe. Request your catalog. Better yet, shop online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the absolute latest stuff at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And don't forget to stop by and talk to them at Dayton. You're gonna appreciate them. I guarantee you that. I sure do. Great folks. Great company. DX Engineering, thanks for your support of Ham Nation. We do appreciate it. And now we've got Dale tonight. We've got some interesting stuff from Dale. How are things your way, Dale?
Hey, we're doing pretty good, Don. Glad to see you on there. Love your DX Engineering commercials. And that is one nice catalog to browse through when you've got time there, I'll tell you. Well, tonight we'll try to get you in the mood for field day. But first, we have a selection of shack photos from an amazing vintage station. Brian brings the first one up here. The station's operated by Dave Jennings. He's WJ6W, and he's one of the main stations on the West Coast AM International Net that meets on 3870 each Wednesday evening at 7:30. Dave reconstructed this great station with many components used in his college radio station back in Iowa. There's a pair of Ampex tape decks there, a Collins audio mixing console, and that famous RCA DX77 ribbon microphone. You're looking now at his Collins station that he operates on the net. And here's where he operates when he gets a chance. He takes a look at the 40-meter vintage station. You saw that briefly. And right now, here's some Collins turntables to check out. Can't find those around anymore. The Collins 20... V transmitter is out in the garage. It's remote controlled, just like in a commercial station. There wasn't room in the house. It fits nice in the garage. In fact, Dave was instrumental in getting the Collins transmitter for Leo and the mixer for the TWIT TV studios. Dave has enjoyed most modes during the modern digital and vintage equipment he owns. He leans toward the older stuff. He likes the tubes after spending many years in the broadcast industry. Here's the upper shot looking down on the tubes in that transmitter. Collins, Drake, Helicopters, and Heathkit all round out his collection of old rigs. His favorite mode, though, is AM, using this vintage equipment. But you can find out more about the AM International by visiting their website at ami-west.com. Well, to get you in the mood for field day this year, I reached into my archives, found a video from the Greater Wichita Area Field Day in 2012. While it's about field day and all the activities that take place during field day, It's more about how to bring all the ham clubs and amateur organizations in your community together to build a bigger and a better field day. It's premiering here on Ham Nation 4 years after we produced it. Let's watch.
On Field Day weekend, the Spirit Boeing Employees Association recreational area was a great place to be for both amateur radio operators and Boy Scouts of all ages.
Well, this weekend, we have a number of clubs here. We have the Wichita Amateur Radio Club here. We have the Valley Center ARC. We have the Skywarn, local Skywarn members. We have the Salvation Army Team Emergency Radio Network, that's Saturn here. We also have a group of Boy Scouts who is forming the GOTA station, and the club that kind of got it all going was the Bears, the Boeing Employee Amateur Radio Society.
The Field Day operation in Wichita has a history that can serve as a model for amateur clubs nationwide. Randy Wing, N0LD, explains.
Well, we noticed in the late 1990s that our clubs were slowly losing membership. They were losing interest in getting together and doing amateur radio. The opportunities were diminishing locally. At the same time, our Bears started to get together and do a smaller field day, and we really noticed how people really got excited about this. So we grew our effort and grew our effort. And then we said, you know, this is so much fun. We want to invite all our friends in the community. So we took the name of Bears off of the field day, and we invited all the other clubs and said, hey, we just want to get together and have a great field day. We want to share our interests. And out of that has come a lot of collaboration. A lot of clubs bring their own interests and their own skill set to this mix. And it's really been cool watching it all come together and have us get higher and higher scores every year.
Like all operations, the combined Wichita field day had a number of short and long-term goals.
The short-term goals are building on our past, really. It's extending into digital communications. It's extending into having Boy Scouts do GOTA. It's getting amateur involvement from new and younger hams into amateur radio. The longer-term goals are to make this as big as it could possibly be. It could be as Our goal would be to try to touch every ham in the Wichita area and get them to come do field day and realize how much fun it really is.
But the biggest goal at any field day operation is to practice emergency communications.
Field day was originally established in the early part of this century as a means to promote the public and amateur radio awareness for emergency communications. And it's built on that, and it's changed, and it's broadened over the years. So our Saturn group is here, and they do communications during emergencies. Our Aries and Racies groups are here, and they do emergency communications. And all of us do Skywarn, which is all about the weather and emergency communications to let the National Weather Service know when severe weather is coming.
In Kansas, hams take emergency communications very seriously. Check out this ready-to-roll station assembled by Roger Bailey in 0ZOP.
It's modular, waterproof, disconnect the cables, put the lids on, and you're up to go. Breaks down into three different sections: HF, ATV, VHF, UHF, TVs for ATV or watching the news, and then the scanner for whatever, 800 meg, fire department, PD, sheriff, ambulance.
A field day operation of this proportion needs a computer engineer. Brandon Troub, KD0HTI, built an Ethernet network that let all eight stations enter their contacts to the same log.
Well, we have about nine stations and a server set up. We're spanning about 1,000 feet of Ethernet cable. We're using three switches to make that expanse. And we have a wireless end router, which is in the pavilion building.
The young men in Hayesville Boy Scout Troop 895 played a big part in the Wichita area field day. Here's Scoutmaster Alan Brewster, W0SY.
We decided at Troop 895 to do GOTA, which stands for Get on the Air, as a opportunity for the scouts in our troop that are licensed hams to show how that scouts being prepared can do emergency preparedness with radio off the grid.
Assistant Scoutmaster James Bice, KD0GJY, compares GOTA to the troops' JODA operation last fall.
Well, GOTA compared to the JODA, Jamboree on the Air, is with, it's just the troop. We set up in location, which is usually our charter, and we set up there, and it's our boys. Same as here, they will run the radios, they will do their logging, and they will have all the fun where Mr. Brewster and I, we will just sit back and we will observe and help them as they are, as needed.
And what do the boys think? Here's Alden, KD0IJJ, Andrew, KD0IJN, and Brody, KD0IJQ.
I think it's pretty fun. The weather's really nice out here.
First of all, I enjoy radio and field day, and the enjoyment is part of it. But I also, since I do not get to operate radio like this very often, it's a good opportunity for me to hone my skills.
I plan to provide support to all the new scouts that come along today and hope that they can get on the air and also have a very good time at it too.
Bonus time, Sedgwick County Commissioner Jim Skelton and his daughter both made their first ham radio contacts with the help of control operator Randy Wing.
Well, I think this is a pretty exciting event for me and my daughter. We spent the last 20 minutes looking at the radio set here to my left. I got to make my very first contact down in North Florida today, and my daughter's currently working on that. You know, I'm really impressed here with the technology that I've seen, the knowledge of the people, and of course, you know, it's impressive to see those young Boy Scouts over there learning how to serve, you know, their perhaps role in emergency communications in the future. You never know what your life's going to bring. So, you know, I'm very impressed.
Hey, it's field day. We can't forget the food. Here's the chef, Don Urban, KC0BVX.
What's for dinner? That's the standard answer to that is roadkill. But last night we cheated and we had hamburgers and hot dogs, potato salad, and baked Rooter Tooters. Tonight we're going to have pulled pork sandwiches, potato salad, and some more Rooter Tooters.
Field day's over now, and much was accomplished. Randy Wing wraps it up.
A lot of amateur radio operators are very good at the technical aspects of our hobby, but as we form groups and niches of interest within the amateur radio community, we don't always communicate between our groups, between different emergency communication groups, between novices, between more experienced people. So Field Day, Greater Wichita Field Day, what it's really done is it's brought all the people in the local community together, and now we've become friends. And now that we're friends, it's a lot easier to support emergency communications together.
Reporting from the Spirit Boeing Employees Association Recreation Area in Wichita, Kansas, for Ham Nation, I'm Dale Puckett, K0HYD.
The call sign of the gentleman with the go-to kit is Roger, N6ZOP, not N0ZOP. Well, I hope tonight's video has put you in the mood for field day, and if you're on your club's field day committee, I hope you found a few great tips from Randy, N0LD. Well, that's it for tonight. A quick reminder, we'd like you to send your shack photos and your videos to hamnationvideos at twit.tv. Amanda's standing by right now in the chat room, but first we're going to check in with George and see if we can find out about the latest news from ICOM. What's new, George?
Pioneer your path. Any time is a good time for a new ICOM base station. Be one of the first to experience how ICOM is changing the way receivers are designed with ICOM's new IC7300. It will exceed expectations. It has RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. With ICOM's IC7851, when running with the big dogs, you'll be the leader of the pack with all the pileup breaking frequency running tools at your fingertips. 1.2 kilohertz optimum roofing filters, new local oscillator design with improved phase noise, several spectrum scope enhancements, and more. Other worthy candidates that cannot be overlooked, ICOM's IC7600 and IC7700. These radios feature LED backlighting on an ultra-wide 5.8-inch display, advanced DSP technology, and three roofing filters, spectrum waterfall display on an impressive 7-inch color LCD, audioscope function for AF observation, and direct remote control operation with ICOM's RSBA1 software. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's base station radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Register to win for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats and other stuff they're giving away. Plus, while you're there, check out the official rules to see how you could win the grand prize. Each month it's a radio, and for May it's going to be the ICOM ID880H VHF UHF digital transceiver, analog and D-Star, 50 watts on both VHF and UHF, wideband receiver, free cloning software download, and more. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win after this and each episode of Ham Nation. And don't forget, if you're in Dayton, come by the ICOM booth between 2 and 3 p.m. on both Friday and Saturday for a live recording, if there is such a thing as a live recording. It'll be going on there, and we'll have a lot of great guests. So with that, I think it's probably about time that we get Amanda in here to wrap things up for us.
I am the ultimate rapper. Just ask me sometime offline. I'm just kidding. Okay, I have so many announcements tonight. Don't laugh at me, Don. I heard you chuckling. That's not right. Okay. All right. First of all, Iowa State Convention this Saturday, May 14th, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central in Boone, Iowa. Next thing, Boy Scouts in Billings, Montana will be activating the Lewis and Clark Trail for the IMPOTA TR09. Yes, that means National Parks on the Air. I always call it IMPOTA. They're going to be there Saturday on a bunch of bands, 2015-10, and the call sign you should look for is K2BSA/7. Not only that, but we also have the Rocky Mountain HamCon Colorado Convention coming up this weekend. Gordo is going to be there. Not only is Gordo going to be there, there's going to be quite a few people. We have the newest president of the ARRL, Rick Roderick, the vice president, Brian Milishowski, Dwayne Allen, the new Rocky Mountain Division director, and get this, his babalicious sidekick, Katie Allen. Yep, no kidding. She's going to be there, too. I heard she's signing for autographs. I'm just kidding, Katie. I love you. Can't wait to see you. The National Voice of America Museum of Broadcasting, located in the former VOA Bethany, Ohio relay station, will host a reception on Saturday, May 21st for Dayton Hamvention attendees. That's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. With all of that out of the way, I only have one question, and you guys can choose between you who would like to answer it. Have you heard of any RF getting into newer model cars when installing your mobile radios? Does anyone, you know, 2015s, 2016s, any RF issues?
Gordo here. Not yet, Amanda. We've done a lot of HF installs, a lot of VHF and UHF installs, and we've not had an airbag, make that an airbag, deploy, nor brakes lock up. Occasionally, we'll make a windshield wiper go back and forth on 75 meters, but no adverse effects to today's modern cars. But I must say, today's modern cars give off all sorts of birdies. Those are discrete little teeny signals that you sometimes tune across on both VHF as well as the high end of HF. Back to you.
Okay. I'm seeing in the chat room someone asking me what my badge name is. I don't even know. Don, what does that mean?
What was the question?
What is your badge name? Is that my rapper name?
I don't know.
No, it's Amanda's. Amanda, you've got something right here. What does it say?
Oh, this thing. Okay, so this is the shirt. I am on the committee. I'm getting it now. Hey, what color is this? I don't know.
It's your first trip to the big city, Amanda?
It might be. Please don't mug me. This is our HamCon Colorado logo. This is the official logo. And if you see someone in one of these bright green shirts, that means that they should have information for you this weekend in Keystone, Colorado at the HamCon Color. Really, Brian? Thanks. I didn't need that. Just like my sunburn that I didn't need. Anyhow, thank you so much. Hey, you guys, that's all I have for tonight. Who's closing it up tonight? George, is that you or Don, is it you?
That's George, probably. I don't know.
George, you take it away. Thanks, everyone.
Oh, that way. I was totally unprepared for this. But I think Don probably was, too.
Yeah.
Well, okay. All right.
My chat room died, so I don't know if anyone posted what the frequencies for the HF nets are on.
Let's go over some frequencies. I can do that for you. 14267, join Steve and the gang. And I know that they were looking around 7180 for 40 meters. Gordo, you going to be joining them on 40 meters?
Yeah, 7177 to 7182. They're around there. Okay. I see them on my ICOM.
There you go. Look at those waterfalls. Isn't that awesome? And 14 Charlie for the D-Star. And do you drop in for Echo Link?
Yep.
With you on that.
There you go.
Well, thanks for being here, everybody. Another fun show tonight. We're looking forward to seeing some of our Ham Nation hosts live from Dayton next week from... where was that going to be? Contest University at the reception for it. So, Gordo, were you going to be at that event?
I will be there, Crown Plaza, and we're going to be there. Val will be there, and Bob, of course, will be there leading the charge, and all of our great DX engineering pals and ICOM America. It's going to be who's who. We'll see you a week from tonight.
Okay, well, we'll see you from here because I won't be there until Thursday. Don, any final words before we go?
No, just thanks, everybody, for being part of the Ham Nation family. We appreciate you and love you, and we couldn't do it without you. And there you go. That's about it.
Okay. Amanda?
Hey, that's all I have for tonight. And except for that, some of you guys kind of have, like, senioritis where you're so excited for Dayton, and I just don't like you, any of you, because you're going and I'm not. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. You guys have a great time. Well, the next week's going to be fun. The live show. You guys all have to tune in for that for sure.
Me too. Neither, Amanda. We'll sit around and we'll cry on each other's shoulders from afar.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay. Well, thanks for being here. We look forward to seeing you next week at the same time for another great show. So 7-3.